Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Rheology Podcast. I'm Brandon. Today we continue our series of real-life interviews with folks who are stirring in their faith. On today's show, Scott sits down with Rheology's own Chris Barron to hear his stirring story. Thanks for joining.
Hey, my name is Chris, and this is my stirring story.
Hey, everybody. This is Scott Johnson, and of course, this is the Rheology Podcast. So we're glad you're here today. We're going to continue down the road of these stirring stories. There's a lot of them. This is just the beginning. So a couple episodes back, you heard me talk about what stirring means. What do we mean when we talk about stirring? If you missed that episode, you might want to go back a couple and listen to that before you follow on with this next one. And then the last one we did was with Tyler Korn, one of the partners here at Rheology. And today is the third leg of that sturdy table, Christopher Barron. Hello, my friend. How are you?
Hello. I'm doing very well.
How's the weather up there, way up north up there?
It's gloomy. And it's like I'm waiting for the actual fall weather to come in. It's tricking me because this feels like spooky season weather.
Yeah.
But it's still it's still in the 80s in the middle of the day. But
you could be Brandon. Brandon's been dealing with 90 degree weather for the last several days and probably more several days. So weird.
What, for real? I thought it should be supposed to be like snowing up there by this time.
We've swapped weather somehow, which is fine with me.
Yeah. I'll take this. This is nice, Brandon.
This Good is job nice. Up there. Thanks, Brandon.
Yeah. Thanks, man.
Thank you for being willing to do this, obviously. And, so we'll just jump right in. I think we have talked before a little bit about your past, but as I've been doing with everybody, would like to start off with like your history, your Christian religious mm-hmm. history background, kind of talk about your upbringing and that mm-hmm. kind of stuff.
So my dad is a white dude from Asheville, North Carolina. My mom is Filipino from Mindanao area in the Philippines, and they join staff with Campus Crusade, or now known as CRU, and they met in Manila, Philippines, obviously before I was born. And then I was born in the Philippines to missionary parents, and I was raised in the church. I was raised in a small private missionary school. I think it was the largest missionary school at the time, which is like 300 kids from K to 12. But they're all missionaries. So I felt like I grew up in an environment of like the elite Christians, right? Or at least the offspring of elite Christians. But my parents did campus ministry. So my upbringing was a little bit different because I remember, I went to traditional church gathering settings, but sometime in high school, we started going to kind of like smaller house church settings on a Tuesday night. And there were no chairs in a room. And I was there with a bunch of college students. And then people would present. And that was my idea of church. But my religious upbringing, I kind of some point in high school or middle school, I started to like really, I felt this pressure to be a really good Christian. I think most of my life, I felt this pressure. I don't think it was for my parents. I think it was just the entire environment I was raised in. I didn't know, like my identity was kind of wrapped up also in an unknown because I was white passing, but also lived in the Philippines. I was a third culture kid. I was a missionary kid, a pastor's kid. So I think my identity, because I remember people asking like, where are you from? When it came out of the States. And I was like, I don't know really how to answer that because like I'm a American citizen, but I've lived in the Philippines my whole life. I speak with this kind of accent, so you wouldn't know that I live in the Philippines. So mm-hmm. I actually don't know where I'm from. I don't know how to say this is home. Anyways, my religious upbringing, though, was all that compiled on top of like Christianity being tied up with memory verses as like a test or a Bible stuff, we'd have like Bible quizzes, Bible classes. So like, I think my faith was wrapped up with performance. And I think at one point I was like, this is too much. I am not having fun with it. I always feel like a really bad Christian because I'm not a really great student. And all those other non-Christians look like they're having way more fun than I am. So I eventually kind of like in high school, kind of like became more rebellious in my faith. And I was like, I don't know if I want to be a Christian. But it was through a series of events that I got into a small group of other high schooler guys and a teacher who helped show me it's more about this relationship rather than like you have to do stuff for God. And then since then, my trajectory has kind of changed and it's been like all over. To this day, I'm still unlearning so much. That was a very quick, broad overview, my religious upbringing.
And we've talked about it before, right? Your upbringing is very unique. You are a PK, pastor's kid, but a real non-traditional missionary kid thing. So you had like a potpourri of like, you know, Christian experiences. So then what led you guys to come into the States? What happened? Did you do a furlough kind of a deal? Your dad do a furlough or?
Every 3 years in the Philippines, we'd come back to Asheville, North Carolina for 6 months. So like North Carolina was home-ish.
Home base, basically.
And then my oldest brother went to UNC Charlotte, the college. Before I went to college, I never stepped foot on a college campus in the States. And I was like, well, if my brother is there, I don't want to be by myself. So I'll go to UNC Charlotte because my brother's there. And my good buddy, my best friend growing up, Drew, who I believe is on here, we both were roommates at UNC Charlotte. So we both came from the Philippines to UNC Charlotte together.
Yeah. You know, the funny thing is I did not realize you guys knew each other in the Philippines until you dropped that bomb on me a couple days ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. I just thought you guys met at school and then.
No. Oh, you didn't know he grew up in the Philippines as well?
He may have told me that, but okay. It was probably 15 years ago. Said it. And then I've gotten to know you so much better, you know, in the last 5 years that I know that you are for sure. It kind of, blew me away, but So you came to the States, you said, hey, I'm going to go to college where my brother is. It's convenient. He's there. Why not?
Yep.
So then talk about like, we talk about Impact, which is you're with Impact, obviously a different version.
Yes.
2.0 or 3.0 or 4.0, whatever it is.
Yeah.
At this point. So talk about like how you got it. Was your brother involved in Impact already?
Yes. I believe Impact was started 2004-ish. And at that point, my brother, I think, was a part of it. Like the year it started, and then so when I arrived, he was like, hey, I'm already part of this group, you should come.
So your brother came in 04.
He was there in 03.
But he was on campus when Justin.
Yes.
Yep.
So I got involved with Impact. And I remember Justin was similar. He had a similar vibe to the guy that helped me, kind of my mentor in high school. I think it was just like, oh, I can be honest. I don't have to feel like I'm intimidated by him, by this like pastor. He was open to like conversations. I think that is at some point, I guess the way I was raised too. I've always been into like punk culture. And part of that is this like contrarian like lifestyle. I was never like super, super into it. But I love the idea of thinking outside the box. Right. And I think that came when I like grew up Christian and realized, I'm like saying to all these other missionary kids, bunch of nerds, like I'm gonna be cool because I'm gonna be different from you. Yeah. And I think I always like being cool by being different.
Yeah.
So I was always challenging. I love to challenge and question, and always try to zag when people zig. So I think that was
you're brought the rebel, up. Man.
I know.
Rebel. You're the mystery kid rebel.
Dumb. I know, but that was very much. You have no idea how. Like Tyler talks about this. Maybe like Drew didn't talk about this, but like I live like a homeless person at campus. Like my room was disgusting. I didn't have a full mattress. I had an inflatable air mattress that would deflate halfway through the night. And I slept on that thing for like at least a year. Anyways, doesn't matter. That I took that to campus because I think I was restarting my faith. Mm-hmm. And I was already questioning everything. I think the way my parents
came to campus, you were questioning things. Okay.
Yes. Yes. Okay. But not to the full extent to now, right? I think I was more of like, oh,
why do I have to do this? Why do I have to do that? Yeah. As a kind of a rebel kid, that's kind of the nature of the beast. Anyway, yeah.
That's right. That's right. And so that I kind of took that to like, so around like sophomore year, probably because freshman year is such a blur and you're just trying to get used to college. Sophomore year is when I started like questioning everything, even questioning like society. Drew and I had this like, I think this idea of like, oh, we should drop out from society. Why are we even in school? We've been in school for 14 years of our lives. This is all a scam. Like, is this all real? Let's live off the grid, right? So it was like, it's trying to see through everything, right? Yeah. But I wasn't actually brave enough to follow through those things. I was all talk.
Yeah.
An arrogant little kid that was all talk. But I took that also to my faith, where I started like questioning a lot of stuff. And I think that was the beginning of like my stirring, because it wasn't out of like, I don't know, I didn't have a super bad religious experience. I think I was just more of like, do we know why we're doing what we're doing? Mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't think people do know that. I hadn't figured anything out. I thought I probably figured a lot of stuff. I was like fairly arrogant when I was younger. But that's how I kind of approached. That's kind of the faith I had around my college years.
Okay. So college goes through, you have a decent campus ministry experience and feel good about that. Obviously, I mean, you interned with Impact. So you're starting to feel like, hey, this is kind of, I mean, you're obviously at that point where you're kind of thinking, no, I could do this for a living, you know, kind of a deal.
I think I didn't want to do what my parents did. I think I was kind of rejecting that as well. Mm. But eventually I really loved having this small group. I think like Tyler, that's when I met Tyler. We were in the same like community group. And I really love this space where we can just talk about our faith very freely and question things together. And I feel like Tyler was a huge part in this, like, oh, I have other people in my life that are also having similar questions. And like, we're trying to like actually figure out, is this something worthy of our time and our like our commitment? And I just felt I love that space. I love mm-hmm. that space of like growing and asking questions together and discovering who Jesus really was. I think that was what made me want to do like full-time ministry. It was that stuff. It wasn't the big events. It wasn't the gathering. I had no desire to like talk in front of crowds. I didn't want to be a teaching pastor. Yeah, I think I just wanted to be in a space to explore who Jesus really was in that kind of setting. So, mm-hmm. Started interning. And I think at that time too, my parents were always helping me figure out what I wanted. They were always asking me to critically see what ministry is and what is success and what isn't. I think the biggest question they would ask is like, what is success in your ministry? Because I think that's when I was like, okay, if it really isn't the numbers, like everyone says it's not the numbers, but all the resources goes into getting the numbers. Yeah. Like, what is success then? And even asking questions like, at what point did people become Christians at Impact? And I was like, I've never thought about that. Because I think the idea is you just come to Impact. And at some point, if you're not a Christian, you just become a Christian. Mm-hmm. Right? There is no like discipleship.
Blending into.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like osmosis, right? You're just like part of the group. And then it just all this information transforms or transfers into you. Yeah. So I started like looking at that stuff too. So I started looking at the systems that were in place. It sounds like I figured it out. I did not. I was arrogant. My theology back then, I fell into like the young, restless reform theology. Dude, Mark Driscoll, I was his audience, right? Even the way he described it, it was like this punk rock, like all this soft liberals, like theology. Right. You think you're so inclusive? Watch this, Zach. It's super exclusive. You have to have the right doctrine, otherwise you're wrong. And I was like, that sounds good to me. Like finally this like edge to Christianity. Because I think there was this, I think when you're younger, you have this desire to prove to yourself that you're capable of anything. Now that I'm older, I have no desire to do that, right? I think I'm more comfortable with what I know or don't know. But back then, it was just like, I felt like I was immortal, right? Like I felt like I could live forever. I didn't have to go to the doctor. When I was sick, I didn't have to take medicine. Also, like, I had this like, oh, okay, I can do whatever I want. The world is my oyster. And I think part of that was like, I think I had this desire to like make, be, have, I don't know, have this like change in the world through campus ministry. And I think it was very much doing stuff, right? Mm-hmm. I think there's always this theme of like, I saw that Christianity was this like, it's all about no one is making disciples. No one is sharing the gospel. No one is doing church right. So let me be the person that does all these things, right? Yeah. And that was my whole identity as a Christian, was wrapped up with like, do you share the gospel? Do you know how to disciple? And what do you, how would you define church?
Yeah.
Right. Because I was super into multiplying discipleship groups that could turn into house churches. That was my big, big thing. And I think people love my passion because no one was talking the way I talked about these things. And I think people love my drive to like really change organizations. And that was my big, I eventually left Impact because my vision didn't align with Justin's vision. And I was a jerk. I really was. I was not nice. I think I talked down to people who saw things differently from me because I was convinced that like I figured it out. Unless you do it the way I discover how to do it, then like that's an off brand of Christianity.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyways, I don't know.
So then where did you go? I mean, because this is after school then, correct?
Yes.
Done. Where did you go then after that?
So after that, I went to another campus ministry at App State through BCM, Baptist Campus Ministries, because they were doing like multiplying house church ministry. I thought they would be further along in the progress. But when I joined staff, there was like no one knew what they're doing. And they were like, oh, Chris knows what he's doing. He'll take the point. I was like, no, I think I was trying to join a team who's already trying to do this. And so like that didn't, I think they eventually got to the place where they were doing it well, but like half the staff wasn't even fully funded or raised. They had no money. They just like did their last gathering that was, because they had a big gathering and they killed it. And then the next year I joined. So everyone who was part of BCM, there was like, what are y'all doing? Like, you've destroyed my college experience. And then, so I tried to do the things I was passionate about on campus. And I did it okay. You know, I did okay. I think we were doing what we wanted to do, but I think I was always still missing it, right? I think I was always still missing, thinking it's about accomplishing these great, great like feats for God. Or doing it the right way.
Building it for him.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll build it for you, Lord. I'm your point guy. I'll go over here and build it for you.
Yeah. And I think it was also like that is I didn't find fulfillment in God. Mm-hmm. I found fulfillment in doing the things for God. And I think that was my drive. So my drive was always doing more, doing more, doing more. And eventually at this point I was started dating Megan after college, and she was doing getting her master's at Gordon Conwell in Charlotte, and we were long distance. And I was okay. Then I got engaged to her long distance. I was like, I probably should be living in the same city if we're engaged. So I moved back to Charlotte. And at that time, Justin and Nathan were leaving out of Impact to do their own thing, and Justin and Nathan asked Tyler and I to take over Impact. So we did that. And yeah, I think I was continuing to be on this drive of like, oh, it's all about discipleship. It's all about evangelism. It's all about like small, like multiplying house churches.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So obviously your stirring is comes natural anyway, because you're inquisitive and you're a rebel. So tell me then when the stirring got to a point where you had maybe a breakthrough or whatever after this. So you and Tyler are now officially on and you're starting. So, you know, where does it go from there, and where do you feel like you felt like that?
You know, I think it was still right at this point. I don't know. It's like, I don't know how to say this, but I was really immature. I think I started to mature and settle down and being like, what is most important? And I think,
a woman will do that to you, you know?
Yeah, for real. I think I changed a lot once I started actually, when I wasn't so selfish. I was so selfish. I was living for myself all the time. But I realized, oh, there's someone else. Yeah. But I just remember like crying to Megan, literally crying and be like, dude, you're such a fake, Chris. Like you're trying to do all these things and you're not even good at it actually. Like, but people think you're good at it because you like to talk about it all the time. But like, what have you actually accomplished? It's just like nothing. You're like the greatest phony that ever existed. I remember having these breakdowns, like two of them, and being like, what is it then? Like, what am I missing? I don't think I was asking, what am I missing? But I just had this, like, this can't be it. Yeah. This can't be it. And I don't know if that would have come if I was super successful at what I did, right? If I had this, like, if I was able to build this huge network of multiplying churches and started this like organization that did blah, 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 I think I would just kept on plugging away. I'm not saying that God purposely took that away from me in order to teach me a lesson. I don't believe that happens either. I think I just wasn't good at it. Like, I don't think I was disciplined enough or mature enough to do what I thought I wanted to do.
Yeah.
But so then I think I started just continuing to like listen, and people started being in my life that talked differently. I think there was more conversation about what is church. House church already helped me open up like the door to see it doesn't have to look like this one thing, right? So I was already talking about like, oh, what is church? How do you define church? What is discipleship? Always asking the question, like people say like, oh, like an ice cream social is discipleship. I'm like, no, it's not. Like if anything is discipleship, then nothing is discipleship, right? But I don't think I really knew, but I always felt like, do I know what discipleship is either though? So I was always trying to like find a deeper, like what is this really all about? Yeah. And I think your podcast around 2020, so we impact shifted the way that Tyler and I wanted to shift. So we started doing like smaller groups. But that was really frustrating because people had no idea what we're trying to do. They just wanted the big gathering thing. They wanted impact to make friends and put on the show and do all the Christian activities. We were like, no, let's not do that. But we had a really small group of people. But again, we love the idea of just like discipling. I think it was just like, hey, let's break down the implications of Jesus' kingdom now. Mm-hmm. What does it mean to be in Jesus' kingdom now?
Mm-hmm.
But then we started doing that. And then like you eventually, Tyler showed me your podcast on Ecclesia. And I think there was this like click of like, okay, I think this is what I was missing about church stuff. But even before that, I think it was like grace became a huge part of that as well. And like really understanding grace.
Yeah.
Like the idea that God isn't asking you to do more for him.
Yeah.
And what does that, and I think after understanding grace more, and that being part of our conversation with students and showing them and them showing me stuff, and then having the conversations with you about church or ecclesia versus church, I think I started questioning a lot of stuff because I was also, again, raised kind of reformed, and like women leadership, like sexuality stuff, like all these like restrictive things that the church and Christianity is super into, I still couldn't let go of that stuff because I was like, oh, it's in the Bible. So how do I hold these things to be true? But through grace, right, and Ecclesia being not this organization, but this like partnership with God, and the Spirit is the one that teaches us, not the Bible. The Bible's a good tool, But the spirit is the one we should be listening to. I started like letting go of these things, man. Like, just realizing that I had this, I thought I was building this super strong, like, lens of theology. But I realized it was actually super fragile, because in my head, if I was questioning women leadership, the whole thing could be collapse. If I once said, oh, women can be leaders in the church, then like the thing falls apart. Yeah. Like, that's not strong theology at all, right? I think I was like thinking I had this really like brick by brick built it, but it was really like, God, man, what he's doing is so beyond my understanding that I try to take it and distill it into the small thing that I can like, no, this is it. This is the control that I need in order to believe in God. Mm-hmm. And when I'm realizing what through other people and the wisdom of other people, I'm like, oh my gosh, like, dude, I know so little, right? And it's really about this trusting in God and his character and who he is. And then when you realize, oh, who he is the guy, he wants to partner with us because he believes in us no matter like our shortcomings. And I think it really rung true for me when I was like trying to prove to God what I can do. And he was like, Chris, bro, I'm not like in this relationship with you because of the things that you can do for me. Like, I just love you and you're my son. And and I think that was like more transformative to me, my theology, than like doing all these things and learning how to do the things.
From the whole Rheology team, we hope these podcasts are encouraging and educational. Rheology exists for three main reasons: to reach, train, and equip those who want to go deeper with God in this partnership called Ecclesia. If God has been stirring in your heart, where you are wondering if there's more than what you've been experiencing in today's 21st century Christianity, we'd love to connect with you, to hear your story and help you know that you are not alone. You can simply contact us via the website, rheologylife.com, or reach out via Instagram at rheology_life. Thanks, and we'll see you next time.